Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud.
Hey, everybody, welcome in once again. It's David Summers hosting another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. It's the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession 100 years ago. Now we step back into the ring, back into time, into the Great Smoky Mountains. That's where we'll find the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. What's going on, my man, Ron?
Oh, just enjoying it, my man. Smoky Mountains is a great place. Getting more accustomed to it every day. Beauty is, it's never ending, man.
Man, this has to be the perfect time of year to be in the Smoky Mountains. Of course, the colors are one thing, and they're probably more prevalent in the fall, but the temperature's got to be really nice about now.
Oh, yeah, man. It's really good compared to living down there in that Tampa area. You've got all that heat and humidity. The other day, man, we had a 50 degree day.
Wow.
You know? So, I mean, you get that, you sometimes get that 80 degree day and then it drops to 50.
Okay. So it was 50 during the daytime?
Yes. 50 during the daytime. Okay. Part of the day between 50 and 60.
Yeah, it's going to be 85 here in Southeast Alabama today.
I talk to my brother a lot, and he's always, Ron, it's 94 today.
He's sweating it down there, Ron.
Wow. And, and then I tell him what I got, and he goes, oh, geez, man.
Yeah, yeah. He's probably saying, I'm coming to visit. I'm coming to stay a while. All right.
Yeah, we'd probably be getting into it if he came to stay for very long.
You would throw him in the creek. I know you would.
Might toss him in the creek back here. Yeah, no rib.
All right, Ron. I tell you what, in my humble opinion, today's Studcast title, North NWA World Title, South Four Shows. That's the title. It can be explained in only two words, big time. That's exactly what Southeastern Wrestling was becoming in May of 1978. You had to be really proud of what was happening in your wrestling company, Ron. So that's really, to be as new as you were getting into it, that had to be pretty big time for you as a young man.
Oh, wow. You know, I was only 30 years old, 1978, you know, and at that point I had two different territories, 500 miles apart. And I don't think that had ever been done, maybe by any promoters anywhere, where they had two territories and they split them. In Southeastern Knoxville, on this particular Studcast, is going to be hosting the NWA World Championship with Harley Race. Four championship matches in all on that card. And the Southeastern Gulf Coast down south also has a magic number of four as well, man. For the first time in the 9 weeks that we had been running and operating there and presenting matches, we're going to run four different cities in this week. So it's going to get an example basically of what's to come there.
All right. And as I remember from the last Studcast, Southeastern Knoxville had Don Curtis coming to town for the TV show to announce who was going to be facing Harley Race only 6 days later on the first Knoxville Friday night card of 1978. Southeastern Gulf Coast had just worked its first major angle on TV, and you didn't even have enough time to tell us the results of the matches in Dothan 6 days later.
Your memory is 100% correct, Dave. That's exactly what happened. And wow, we ran out of time because, geez, we're just covering so much ground with having two territories it's pretty hard to get it all done in an hour's time, just breaking it down into 1 week at a time. So all of that and a whole lot more, man, is going to be discussed in this episode. So much was happening at that time, man. I was having a lot of trouble keeping up with business. It was like, wow, you know, I'd be in the South and I'd be handling stuff in the North. And then when I was in the North, I'm getting stuff from the South. It was really crazy. It's kind of like today, man, and keeping up with the YouTube channel I got.
Yep.
And the classic ContinentalWrestling.com streaming channel.
Hey, by the way, how's that going, Stud?
Well, you know, after this Studcast is being released, there should be several more hours of programming available on there. We're putting on all the time, but we're putting on a big load of them after this Studcast. We're going to be making sure that they get out there. And the Superstars of the Past, number two, about Martin Farmer Burns, man, who is my choice for wrestler of the last decade of professional wrestling before the 20th century. Wow, what a tremendous wrestler he was, and what an impact he has on the sport on into the 20th century. And so that one is out there, and this is going to be really unique, man, the way we're doing these now. It's an audio-visual journey, man. And so we're going back into the late 1800s, and every time I bring up a wrestler's name, they're going to throw slides up. So you're going to see what these guys look like. And, you know, and the slides are, there's a lot of subjects that's going to all be covered. In fact, I'm not seeing any more. It's pretty much all now a visual, these programs. So many more stories are going up now out on the streaming channel. And there's also a lot of new Continental TV shows that have not been on there yet that are going up too in the next day or so. So fans out there, if you've already subscribed and you're already watching the Classic Continental Wrestling on the streaming channel, you know how much stuff is on there. Wow, it's pretty amazing. And I can tell you now, there's going to be a lot more of it on in the next couple of days. And I really believe, Dave, this is someday going to be the best old school streaming channel on the planet, man.
Wow. Hey, I can't, I wouldn't argue that. So to me, I mean, I think that's just obviously what it is. So where do we ride today, Stud?
Well, Southeastern Knoxville, man, has an NWA world title match in this Studcast. And we're going to be talking about that card, obviously, and three other championship matches on that card. We're going to get that day, fans will get the debut of Bob Roode. And they are also on the same card going to get to see Sylvester Ritter, who is the Mid-South Junkyard Dog, who actually broke in kind of in Knoxville, and we sent him on to Bill Watts in Mid-South over there. He's going to come back, spend a couple of weeks. He wants to come and spend a couple of weeks in the Smokies, man. So, gosh, obviously I bring him in. So he's on this card. And we're going to discuss the Fantastic TV promotes this big world championship card. And this starts the first week of May, TV ratings month. So, you know, kind of where TV is going to be going on this one. Yeah. So, and then we're going to reveal the results of this card, the world championship card, the attendance, and another championship. This is another one of those championship raised price events, man, that's going to crank some pretty big volume too, and a pretty big potential profits on the afternoon and the night. This is actually going to be on the first Friday night that we run in 1978.
All right.
Then we're going to ride south into the Southeastern Gulf Coast territory, man. We're going to clean up what we didn't get to last episode, you know, which was the results, obviously, of the Dothan card of April 28, 1978. We talked about the TV, but we didn't have enough time to tell people about what happened on that card. We'll also reveal in this one, because this is going to load in one again, we're going to cover another Friday night card, the one of May the 5th, the same night that we're getting that world championship in Knoxville. We're going to be having a big card in Dothan, Alabama. So all that's taking place at the same time. We're going to discuss, obviously, the TV that promotes the Dothan event and the results of the event, the attendances for both of the Friday night cards. And then we're going to briefly talk about the other three cities who were running that week. First time ever in that territory, there's going to be four towns running in 1 week. So if we can cover all that today, man, and have any time left, I'll answer another learning tree question.
That sounds hopeful, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when I think about what we're about to get into here, yeah, I am hopeful. I'm hopeful we'll get there. Yeah.
All right, I thought you would be. All right, so really, this could be one of the busiest studcasts that we've ever done, Ron. So why don't we start it with that big NWA World title card in Knoxville, May 5th, 1978.
All right, the opening match for this one, man, starts out with two legends of the sport against each other in the very first match, Ron Wright against Dick Steinborn. I mean, Ron Wright's a legend in that part of the country for sure. Dick Steinborn's a legend throughout the country and across the country. So opens up with a great opening match. Rip Smith in the second is going to be facing off with a future Hall of Famer that was returning just for a little 2 week stay. Sylvester Ritter was his actual name, but he was known in Knoxville as Sylvester Ritter, but out in Mississippi all the way into Oklahoma, he was the Junkyard Dog, man. He was the man for Mid-South Wrestling. So he's going to be on this card, and he's going to hang out and stay with us for a couple of weeks. Tony Charles is going to be wrestling a newcomer, a great heel from the Florida territory. But when he comes to southeastern Knoxville, because we're short of baby faces, he's going to get his first opportunity to be a baby face in his entire career. And I'm talking about Bob Roode. And then the great Malenko, you know, he might not have been given the green light for a Russian chain match yet, but he's going to get one that's similar to it. He's in the Southern Brass Knucks Championship match against Bearcat Brown. And he's going to, you know, Bearcat's going to be his southeastern debut, and he's putting up his Brass Knucks title against Boris Malenko.
Wow.
Then there's the southeastern tag belts. They're on the line again. And this time, the champions Condrey and Phil Hickerson, presented by Ron Wright, they're going to be defending against two Welch cousins, my brother Robert and my cousin Jimmy Gold. So because of who's involved in the last two title matches and the fact that Don Curtis was going to be on the TV, that we're going to be discussing next in just a minute, naming the man who's going to face Harley Race, I'm going to wait until the TV in this studcast to give everybody who these last two championship matches involve.
Well, I am shocked by that, Ron. You always keep us waiting for big news, Stud. I think you enjoy the mystery of it all. I think that's the whole key to you. So this time, however, it is going to be short-lived, because I'm sure the Knoxville TV show of April 29th of 78 is going to be the next thing that we talk about.
Well, you're right.
All right.
So we're going to get to it pretty quick, those two championship matches. So it's early as, you know, that's what's going to be coming up. And it was located, you know, this was actually a loaded man with important information, especially for the man of the hour, man, Don Curtis. And Don Curtis opened the show with Les Thatcher sitting at the set. He got a huge round of applause from the studio audience. He'd been sending in a lot of promos. He has a very, very negative opinion of heels, and it pretty much shows in a lot of his decisions about what he's going to happen with Southeastern. So he gets a huge round of applause when Les introduces it. And he gets right to the point in this one. And he asked the director to replay the video, the one that we played in the last cast where the NWA champion did the personality profile. Mm-hmm. And so, again, Harley made everyone at Southeastern aware of, in this video, of that rarely known NWA rule that a masked man could never be NWA world champion. So, and you know, just to remind Ray, you know, everybody kind of what Harley said, he says, you know, Ron Fuller, who had held him to a 1 hour draw a year earlier, probably deserved a title shot, but Fuller was nowhere to be found. you know, there's only a masked man around there calling himself the Tennessee Stud. And he says, I assume that guy's representing Ron Fuller. Mm-hmm. You know, he says he looks just like him. He's got to be, you know. So
yeah.
So that he's going to be glad to wrestle. But he said he would be happy to wrestle the masked Tennessee stud for the title. But if the stud won, he was never going to be able to wear the belt to represent the NWA. So he asked, who's going to get the shot?
Right.
You know, basically, he finishes up by throwing it to Don Curtis. Who's going to get the shot? Right.
Mm-hmm. So what did Don Curtis have to say?
Well, he told us, man, that he had put a lot of thought into who best deserved this upcoming NWA world title shot, and that he had already informed the NWA world champion Harley Race of his decision 3 days before this Saturday when he's doing the show, so that Harley knew he was going to be wrestling, and that he had decided that the man who should wrestle Race had not been here in Southeastern in more than 6 months, since losing a very questionable match involving three people more than just his opponent in a loser leaves Southeastern match, that he had always felt uncomfortable. And Don Curtis was a really honest dude. You know, he said he had always felt uncomfortable with his decision to ban a wrestler from Southeastern when there was so much outside interference involved and so much at stake, especially as in a loser leave match, you know, if this guy lost. So he continued, you know, by saying, you know, when you consider how close this wrestler has come to winning the NWA world title mm-hmm. and being the opponent of the NWA champion last week, he admitted he at least wanted to meet again for the belt. Mm. So it was a really pretty simple decision, he said. So he invited out the Tennessee stud, who had not been seen in person on the Southeastern Knoxville TV in more than 2 months.
Ah.
Because I'm down there in Florida, man. I'm down there in Pensacola and Dothan,
yep.
and you know, I'm doing TVs, but it's not Knoxville TVs. So the stud actually got a bigger welcome than Curtis did. Oh, thank goodness. So Don Curtis got up from the desk with Les, and he shook the stud's hand, and he welcomed him and apologized for his decision to ban him from Southeastern Wrestling for a year as a result of the Loser Leaves match on October 28, 1977. When the stud lost to the Mongolian Stomper. He said, you've served more than 6 months of that ban with dignity. And he says, I'm happy now to release you from the last 6 months of that Loser Leaves ban. And you will now be allowed to meet the NWA world champion Harley Race next Friday night on behalf of Southeastern Wrestling. Well, the studio fans, man, they were already pretty excited about seeing me out there. And by that point, they were pretty much going crazy. But they kind of got up on their feet. And about that same time, Don Curtis, he reached up and he took the mask off the Tennessee stud. And he said, welcome back, Ron.
Wow.
And good luck next Friday night.
Wow. Man, that is a start to a TV show right there. So I can almost hear them cheering at homes across the Southeast, across that part of Tennessee. So how do you follow that, Ron?
Well, with a fantastic May ratings book, TV show, man, you got to. It's TV time, it's rating time, and wow, you got to crank it. So a championship match is in this one, man, going to open it up, and the championship match is going to close it, and the middle of it's going to be with the NWA world champion and his opponent in the personality profile. So the last two matches for the Friday night card that I didn't give you earlier, I'm going to get to that now, Dave. They were the biggest title matches on that card, obviously. One of those was the Southeastern title with the champion, Mongolian Stomper, managed by Gorgeous George Jr., defending his title for the first time ever against Ronnie Garvin. And the main event
wow.
was now decided at this point. Harley Race would now be defending his NWA world title versus Ron Fuller.
All right, that's really a great card, Ron. So who was in the first TV championship match?
Well, it was kind of a very unusual Brass Knucks championship match with Bearcat Brown defending against Don Lambrick, who had been on quite a few TVs, big guy, over 300 pounds. Bearcat Brown was kind of a star from the western side of the state and the Brass Knucks champion. It was his first appearance in Southeastern. People really didn't know much about him, but they're going to find out that this guy can get it done. So Bearcat, you know, he took care of business, and each wrestler had his fist tape, and with these type of matches, anything went. You could do anything. Everything was legal. Didn't matter what it was. So of all people, somebody comes to join Les at the set for the match. And you can imagine who would like to be in a Brass Knucks match, man. It's pretty close to what he's screaming he wants all the time. Boris Malenko shows up at the set with Les. And he watches the match. Actually, he's going to wrestle this guy the next Friday night for his Brass Knucks championship. And he starts out by making fun of Bearcat Brown. He says, look, he's just got his fist tape. He goes, you know, and he was saying only here could he still be getting he needs to be getting a chain match, you know. And he liked the one I need to be getting with Ronnie Garvin. So he kept bringing up Garvin in the chain match. So he said he might as well pick up the Southern Brass Knucks Championship, though. He says, this guy's in town. He's willing to defend his championship. He says, I'm used to going a lot further than he's willing to go, I think. And, this is going to be a piece of cake, basically, for him. So Bearcat won the match after the opening of a pretty small cut on over Lambrick's eye. Because it doesn't take much when you tape fists for them to be able to cut you pretty darn easily. And so Bearcat won the match, man, and he got that little cut over Lambrick's eye, and Malenko laughed about it. You know, he's saying to Les, he says, when the eye started bleeding, he says to Les, my chain would have knocked that guy's eye out. So they both interviewed after the match, both of those guys, Boris, and at the set, and actually Bearcat in Studio B. And then the next match, Robert Fuller and Jimmy Golden, boy, they rocked the studio, man, in the second match, which they won, and they interviewed at the set. And the champions and Ron Wright from Studio B were in that studio. And it was Rob and Jimmy's first title match with the Condrey and Hickerson team. And it's going to be a great match, I can tell you that. So I was with Les for the personality profile. We watched the interview from Harley Race, not the one that opened the show from the week before, another one that had been sent 2 days earlier by Harley Race. And Harley knew who he was going to be wrestling. And he yelled about how he couldn't imagine a commissioner of a wrestling company allowing a wrestler who lost the loser leave match to not leave and then allow him to put a mask on to hide his identity. You know, he said, it's just ridiculous. And he said that Ron Fuller was one of the first wrestlers he defended his belt against in 1973. And he reminded, me, because I'm sure he knew I was there watching, which I was. And he said, and it was an easy victory in 1973. But then he said, he had not wrestled me since. And until 4 years later, and which was last year. And he said, I have to admit, Ron Fuller was a much improved wrestler. He wasn't easy, basically. And he says, I was not who he would have chosen to meet, especially since I'd been born in Tennessee. I'll be wrestling in my hometown arena in front of one of the loudest crowds, he said, he had ever heard anywhere in the world. He said, those crazy Tennesseans might fill that Coliseum to overflowing again like they did last year. But he said it wouldn't make any difference because he was the baddest man on God's green earth. And he was ready to prove it next Friday night.
You bet. Wow.
So wow. I kept it short and sweet. I thank Don Curtis for allowing me to remove my mask, for allowing me the opportunity to meet the NWA champion again, for my chance to make my family the most famous in wrestling all over the world with one huge win next Friday night. And for the thousands of fans who had set the all-time record crowd last year in the Coliseum, we tore the roof off the Coliseum for an entire hour, and for the opportunity to give them what so few fans in the world ever got to see, the change of a world championship right there in their city. I said, there's no bigger event in sport, no bigger moment in a wrestler's life or in the fans' life And next Friday night, I'm going to leave the Knoxville Coliseum with the 10 pounds of gold.
Wow.
I kind of unsnapped my lapel microphone. I handed it to Liz, and I turned, instead of going into the studio, I disappeared in the darkness of the unlit Studio B. And wow, that crowd roared, man. They were ready. I was ready.
Well, okay, so they haven't seen you in a while, and then you kind of walk away in the darkness, so the mystery is still there, that air about you, even though you had taken the mask off. I mean, so that's, I mean, that was really kind of setting the scene. How did you end the TV show?
Well, Rip Smith, who was a great young wrestler, man, he got himself a rare TV win. He didn't have many opportunities. That's such great talent there to get on TV. And then he did an interview from the set with Les. And his opponent, the future Hall of Famer Sylvester Ritter, the Junkyard Dog, he was there. And he did an interview from Studio B. And wow, was Junkyard Dog improved on his interviews. He was a much improved wrestler, kind of like I had done in the case of wrestling Arlie in 73 and then not doing it again until 77. Junkyard Dog had really improved. And their match that next Friday night, Rip Smith and the Junkyard Dog, was a classic. Ronnie Garvin opened the last segment with a video at the set with Les. And this was after the match with Stomper. And with the help of Gorgeous George Jr., Stomper had won the Southeastern belt from Robert Fuller. Ronnie Garvin was seconding Robert. And Garvin had been in Rob's corner. But after seeing what happened, he was too late to save Rob from losing the belt, but he wasn't too late to catch Gigi, who was trying to run to the dressing room, and he piled him on the concrete floor of the Coliseum and pile drive him. Wow, it was wicked looking. And Gigi had to be carried to the dressing room after it was over. So the Mongolian Stomper defended his Southeastern belt against another legend in the last match, Dick Steinborn. And Stomper got a big win over on TV over a quality opponent. Beating Dick Steinborn is no easy feat. Stomper took care of the job. And he and Gorgeous George Jr. went to the set. Garvin did the last interview from Studio B. Garvin made in his interview another promise to Gigi, which he had made the week before, that I'm going to hurt you, Gigi. And he did. I'll drive him. They had to carry him to the dressing room. But he made him another promise. He said, you know, and Gigi was wearing a neck brace in this show. I mean, his neck was still bad. He promised Gigi that if he got involved in the match the following Friday night, that he was going to end his managing career.
Wow. Okay, so that's a really great TV show for the first week in the May rating book. So what happens at the Coliseum Friday, May 5th of 78?
But Dick Steinborn won against Ron Wright. Rip Smith and Sylvester Ritter, the Junkyard Dog, wrestled to a 20-minute time limit draw. Great match. Really, really great match. Because the Junkyard Dog was a babyface, too. And, so Bob Roop, then, who was a former Olympic champion, won over Tony Charles, one of Tony Charles' rare defeats. Said a lot for Bob Roop's ability. Then Malenko won the Brass Knucks title from Bearcat Brown, just like he said he was probably going to do. The Southeastern tag belts were held up in the championship match between Condry and Hickerson and Robert Fuller and Jimmy Golden. And there would be a return match the following week for those belts. Ronnie Garvin was disqualified in the Southeastern title match with the Mongolian Stomper because he basically went crazy and tore the neck brace off of Gorgeous George Jr. After the match after he was disqualified, he managed to get rid of the Stomper. He got his hands on Gorgeous George. He ripped his neck brace off. He jumped off the top rope in his throat, and then he pile-drived him again. So Gigi was carried from the ring and for the second week in a row, and he would not return to Southeastern Wrestling for a long time after this. And he's never going to manage a Mongolian Stomper again. So Harley Race and I wrestled to the second straight 1-hour draw in just over a year. almost with 2 one-hour draws within 1 year's time. And this one was, I think, even more exciting to the fans than the last one. And if Harley thought the crowd was loud in the first one, he must have really thought they were unbearable in this one. And, you know, Harley had to be carried from the ring at the end of this one.
Wow.
We got into it after it was over, and I was able to pile drive him. Wow, once they sacked him up on the stretcher and they carried him out, that might have been the biggest roar of the night. That crowd all stayed when it was over.
Yeah.
And watched an entire hour match for the second year in a row.
Wow. All right. Had to be a big night. What was attendance like?
Well, the setup for the building was exactly the same as the year before. We maxed out the seating the year before, and they wouldn't allow me or anybody else to add a single seat to that manifest, it was called. I mean, you looked at the floor and the seating arrangement. It's called a manifest, and they showed that to me. I said, can we put some here, put something? You can't put anything anywhere, Ron. that they won't allow any more people in the building than this. So the front row of ringside was still the $20 per ticket. But the remaining ringside was just a little bit less than it had been the year before. It was like $7 each. And all the other seats in the building were a dollar more than usual. So the attendance for this one, Dave, was only 50 fans short of that all-time record-breaking crowd from the year before. So the gross house was down a little less than $3,000 from what it had been the year before. Hmm. So it sounded, I'll tell you, in the building, though, it sounded even bigger than the year before. When you got big, huge sellouts like that, you can't go out there and say, well, this one is bigger than that one.
Right.
But wow, the sound was bigger. I mean, the fans were even more into it than they had been the year before.
I can imagine. All right, so another one over the 6,000 figure. That's pretty awesome. All right, but this is a good place for a break. Let's do that. And while we're getting ready for the break, you need to know ClassicContinentalWrestling.com. ClassicContinentalWrestling.com. It's the best old school wrestling site on the planet. They're streaming everything that you see on YouTube, Southeastern Rewind, and so much more. You got to check it out. ClassicContinentalWrestling.com. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll come right back. This studcast will continue in a moment right here. Have you visited the ClassicContinentalWrestling.com streaming channel? Ron is doing some things that he's never done before, making wonderful audio-visual stories of professional wrestlers that will eventually lead to his first book about wrestling, The Real History of Professional Wrestling. These audio-visual stories are on ClassicContinentalWrestling.com, the streaming channel. Subscribe now. Only $4.99 per month or $39.99 per year gets you the best old-school wrestling content on the planet. All right, welcome back once again. David Summers with the Tennessee Stud. It's another Studcast. All right, so much going on and so much packed into this Studcast. Where do we ride to next, Stud?
We're going to be riding south, man, 500 miles in the southeastern Gulf Coast, that territory down there. We're going to begin with the Dothan card on April 28, 1978. We talked about the TV to promote the card and the big angle that was on that TV between Rip Tyler and Billy Spears in last week's Studcast. So we're going to be finishing up with what we didn't get to last week, which is mainly the results of that April 28, 1978 card. We're going to refresh everybody's memory, man, if I can, of the card and to give the results of the matches as we go, because for the first time, we have a second Friday night card to get to in this decade. So we're loaded up, man, as usual. So on the Dothan card of April 28, 1978, the first match was the Masked Pro, Tarzan Baxter versus Eddie Sullivan, and the Pro won. So not only will I give you who the match was, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you what the results were, because we've already discussed the TV at the big angle, the really bloody angle where basically Billy Spears took over Rip Tyler's assassin team. So in the second match on April 28, 1978, Mike Stallings and Eddie Mansfield, there was a 20-minute time limit draw. third match was Charlie Cook versus David Schultz. And wow, this was a really wild one, man. Both men got disqualified. And after they got disqualified, they fought all over that Farm Center, man. And they're going to be wrestling each other again the next week. This time, though, it's going to be with lumberjack rules, which means wrestlers are going to be surrounding the ring to try to keep them inside. So fourth match was a return match that came from the finals of the Gulf Coast Tag Tournament the week before. It was Ricky Gibson and Robert Gibson, who had won the finals of the Gulf Coast Tag Tournament from the Assassins and were the new Gulf Coast Tag Champions. The Assassins were managed in this one by Rip Tyler, but he cost his team a victory in this match on the 28th when Billy Spears, at this point, had come out of the audience and kind of distracted him, and he made a fool of himself and clumsy and everything else, and actually cost his team the win. So Spears and his mom's money had made the Assassins, man, a new rich team, and the three of them had attacked Rip Tyler on the TV 6 days before this match, and they bloodied him up pretty badly. So on this night, Spears was in their corner, the Assassins. He was their new manager, and they were facing the Gibson brothers, who were wearing the new belts. Rip Tyler was nowhere to be seen. So it was another wild match between these four, which were having great matches. The Assassin team was great, and so were the Gibson boys. And all four men were in the ring at the same time toward the end of it. The building was on its feet wild that night. Fans were really, really into it. And this time, it was Rip Tyler's turn to be hiding in the crowd like Billy Spears had done the week before. So Billy Spears was on the floor while this all four men were in the ring, and he was about to trip one of the Gibson brothers, and all of a sudden Tyler appears. He's still bandaged up from the 6 days earlier where they busted him pretty good, and he kind of appeared from out of nowhere all of a sudden. Spears never sees him. He comes from behind Spears and he nails him. And Spears went down, and then Tyler reached in. And instead of Spears, who was going to snatch one of the Gibson's feet, pull him out and try to get a win, Tyler reached in and snatched one of the Assassin's legs. And Robert Gibson landed on top of him and he got the three count. So Spears recovered from the dirt floor and pretty quickly took something from his pocket, put it on his hand, video of this, showed it very clearly on the TV, and he started in on Rip Tyler, man, on the outside of the ring. Well, Tyler started bleeding again, and the Assassin jumped out of the ring to help Spears finish off their former manager, man. I think they were just going to try to put him away. This would be the end of it. And so the Gibson boys were still in the ring celebrating their win, and they were about to leave. And they saw this going on. Three men down there for the second time in 6 days beating up one guy, Rip Tyler. So they jumped out of the ring on the back of the Assassins, and boy, the building exploded. And the six of them, they fought their way to the Assassins' dressing room on the back side of that huge Houston County Farm Center building. Man. You know, as you came in the back door back there, you know, and fans were all around them, man. I mean, this fight continued. They went out into the dirt floor there behind ringside in the main part of the building. I didn't think it was going to get over. So, and when it was finally over, the Assassins and Spears, they got into the dressing room. I was right there watching their backs, and so was David Schultz and Eddie Mansfield. They were there, mm-hmm. too, because we had already experienced some riots, and we were going to be there to take care of each other.
Right.
So, man, I was really encouraged that night by the heat that this team had, man, by just getting a new manager, you know, how in the heck that changed their ability and their power to draw money was pretty amazing, man. So the main event for this night was the Gulf Coast Singles Championship, Bob Armstrong. And he'd been undefeated since winning the belt on the second night that we ever ran a Southeastern show in Dothan. And I was the guy to meet him on that night. We had a very good match, man, in front of a crowd that was really into it. Dothan, you've been there, Dave, and you know what that town's all about. Those fans could get crazy, and they've been crazy for every match that night, just about. So Bob got a kind of a slick, unexpected win, but he gave me most of the match, so that I had a whole lot of heat coming out of it. And He was so over the fans, almost carried him to the dressing room. Gosh, they fought around him as a mob.
Wow.
You know? And I stood in the ring kind of like a dummy and watched him go to the dressing room. And then when I got out, they decided they wanted me. You know, I'd lost the match. You know, I mean, I hadn't even won. So, you know, I realized, man, the heels, we were getting some real heat at that point, man. And the fans were ready to fight. Three different sets of heels that night. They wanted to get Schultz. They wanted to get me. They wanted to get the Assassin.
When you say they wanted to get you, to encourage you? Okay.
Well, I don't think they were going to encourage me, no. To destroy me, maybe, but not encourage me.
I know those crowds. All right, so not the first time that had happened in the building. I'd seen it before. So, attendance, how did you do? Because I know you had a lot on the line, and you were moving up a little bit every week.
Well, we were up again, man. Gosh, it was great. It was only 100 people, but we went up to 2,100. And the entire crew, man, and when I got the figure, I told the guys in the dressing room, and I'm sure Bob did the same thing in his dressing room, what the figure was. And the guys were just celebrating this small 2,000 crowd. I mean, it wasn't like it's a big deal in a way, but it was a big deal because we were struggling from the bottom up, and it kept growing. So I wasn't going to be on the next dozen card. Or the TV the next day. Mm-hmm. I got on a plane early the next morning, flew from Knoxville through Atlanta, on into, through, you know, bound for Knoxville. I flew into Atlanta and on to Knoxville. And about the same time I was boarding a plane in Dothan that was going to take me to Atlanta, and then on to Knoxville, Don Carson was boarding a plane in Knoxville on his way to Dothan. Because he's going to basically be taking my spot on this TV, this next TV. So I'm going to be on the Gulf Coast TV that day. Carson's going to be on the TV that day, and he'll be in Dothan, and he's going to be there 6 days later to be wrestling Bob Armstrong on the same night that I'm going to be in Knoxville wrestling Harley Race for the world title.
Wow. Wow. So, I mean, talking busy, so you were kind of busy with all kinds of things to take care of, not even taking into consideration the flying back and forth, but it was a great idea. I think that was pretty cool to send Don Carson to replace you in Dothan, because Don Carson was so well known, and you talk about heat. He could produce some heat in the Dothan area as well. He was good in Knoxville. He was equally good down in the Dothan area. Okay, so where to now?
Well, to next Friday night's card, man, on May 5th, 1978, down there in southeastern Gulf Coast. And we had some things going in Dothan, man. And we had created some momentum for the future and maybe the rest of the territory. And hopefully, man, some of these new cities that we were about to open in this one, we're going to talk about a few of them, are going to be like Dothan and start to grow pretty quickly and come from being a dead territory the one that's got some life. In fact, later on, before the end of this summer, it's going to be darn near record setting. So the first Dothan match on May the 5th, 1978, was a return match from the week before. Mike Stallings had wrestled Eddie Mansfield to a 20-minute time limit the week before, and this time it was going to be a 30-minute time limit match. The second match on this card was going to be the Mass Pro, Tarzan Baxter, against another big name, the Intern. So it's two masked men, both wearing white masks in the second event. The third match was Charlie Cook and David Schultz. And after they fought all over the building the week before, they're going to be confined to the ring by the wrestlers surrounding it. It's going to be a lumberjack match. The fourth match was a new one. And for old Gulf Coast fans, they had never seen one of these, I don't believe. It was a six-man elimination tag match. It involved the same six wrestlers who had almost caused the riot the week before. And the rules for the match would begin with three men on each team in the ring. And when a man was defeated, he had to go to the dressing room. And the match continued until all the wrestlers on one team had been defeated. So this kind of match, man, had lots of twists and turns in it. Anything pretty much could happen. And then it was in this match was going to be the Gibson brothers, mm-hmm. Ricky and Robert, mm-hmm. and they're going to partner up Rip Tyler, who has lost his team and a whole lot of blood to this to those three guys, and they're going to be wrestling against the Assassin Billy Spears.
Hey, that's a pretty cool match, in my opinion. I've seen them before. You never know what could potentially happen, and it could easily be one man ending up against three. So how about the main event? What'd you have there?
Well, man, in the main event, Mr. Goody Two-Shoes, old Gulf Coast champion Bob Armstrong, was going to defend his belt against a great heel, man, in my estimation. A guy that had not been there in that part of the country for years, but they would never forget him. Mm-hmm. And, Don Carson is going to be going up against Bob Armstrong for the belt in the main event.
Yeah, just a little bit of professional jealousy in your voice right there, Stud. Okay, but that's a really good card for Dothan, Alabama, anytime. So what happened on the TV 6 days earlier, because that's how it goes in Dothan, the TV show is on, at that point, was on Saturday afternoon, and then the wrestling was happening the next Friday night. So 6 days earlier, when you were not there, but you were on the Knoxville TV, and Don Carson was on the Dothan TV, quite a swap, 500 miles apart. Remember, it was the first week of the May ratings month.
Oh, man, I'm not going to forget that day. Tell me, man. It was going to be the very first rating month for Southeastern Gulf Coast on all the stations in the entire territory. This is the first time you got numbers. And I intended, man, to put some numbers on there. And then I had an ace in the hole, Dave, on this one for this TV. Southeastern Gulf Coast, this guy is going to affect not just the TV, he's going to affect the entire future of the company. So in addition to the show, which is going to have a Gulf Coast Championship match with Bob Armstrong in it, it's going to have a six-man elimination tag on TV. And then the big surprise was Gordon Solie, who I had made a deal with to add him as a second commentator, was going to be on the show for the first time ever. So he started on the first day of the first ratings month for Southeastern Gulf Coast.
Wow. So you get Gordon Solie, the Florida and Atlanta territory commentator, seen around the world every week on WTBS, Ted Turner's satellite station, to do. So Gordon does the Southeastern Gulf Coast show with Charlie Platt?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, man. I'm pulling out all the stops. I certainly did. I got Gordon Solie, man, to come in there and work with Charlie. And by doing that, I added instant credibility to the TV show and the territory as well. Charlie opened the show as usual. This is what Bob told me, because I wasn't there that day to see it. I wish I had been. Mm-hmm. But Bob said Charlie opened the show as usual, and then he introduced the second commentator, the new commentator. And he said, when Gordon Solie walked out of that door and went to the set, he said, that studio went nuts. You know, and everybody said recognized who he was. Man. Yeah. And he said, you know, and it put, what it did is it put our TV show in a class with anybody's show in the country, man, or the world for that
Absolutely,
fact.
Yeah.
Two tremendous commentators on this show. So Bob Armstrong told me the next Sunday night in Pensacola, after I flew there from Knoxville, after I finished the TV, I had to fly back in to wrestle Sunday night in Pensacola, Florida. And after I got there, I was talking with Bob about the show, and he said, what a great show it was. And he told me how over Gordon Solie was. He said, and he said, Ron, the most amazing part of all of it is, he said, who do you think got blown away the most by Gordon Solie showing up to do the show out of nowhere? And I asked him who, and he said, the wrestlers, all of them. He said, they were like, wow, Ron got Gordon Solie doing the show too. So the six-man elimination tag opened this Dothan show, and it had all the stars in it. It wasn't just three good guys against three jobbers. It was the Assassins and Eddie Mansfield against Charlie Cook and the Gibson brothers on TV. And they had a great elimination match. In fact, it lasted the first and the second segments of the show. It lasted for almost 30 minutes. Sometimes those shows could go an hour, those type of matches. So, and then Don Carson joined Charlie Platt and Gordon Sully for the personality profile. And Bob said Carson was still over, and he had good heat, man. He said as soon as he walked out into the studio, he said that place went crazy. Oh, my God, there's that punky Carson again. I can imagine. So Carson, you know, because he's on the profile and he's got both Gordon on one side and Charlie Platt on the other, right off the bat, a la what Don Carson was all about, he says right to him right away, he says, I got to see this new championship belt that I'm going to be wrestling for. You know, and he says, if I don't like it and I don't get to see it, he says, I'm not going to show up. Armstrong brought the belt out of the dressing room, and he handed it to Carson right there on the profile. So Carson held the belt, and then he told Platt and Sully, he said, he looked at it, and he says, okay. He goes, it's a pretty nice belt. You know, he says, I'll wrestle him. I'll show up, you know. So then he was going to tuck it underneath his arm like he's going to keep it, and Bob snatched it out of his hands, and he went back to the dressing room with it. So in the third segment of the show, David Schultz, who's starting to get some heat, man. He watched the video of his match the night before with Charlie Cook, the one where they fought all over the building. And later Bob described Schultz, after he watched the video, which really should have got him over enough, he said Schultz just absolutely destroyed a job boy. Because, wow, I thought he was going to kill the guy. You know, and then he said that, and then he said he did a great interview. Charlie Cook did a great interview. They're going at it in a lumberjack match. So last match on the TV was Bob Armstrong defending the Gulf Coast Championship on television. Television, a big six-man tag to start the show, a big championship match on the end. And another Gulf Coast star of the past is going to be wrestling Armstrong. No jabroni, no job boy, Eddie Sullivan. Pretty good guy. And so Bob wore his championship belt into the ring, and then when he took it off, he left it sitting in the corner underneath the ropes there. And he and Sullivan had a great match. And then Bob was about to finish Sullivan off, and Don Carson came out of the dressing room. And you've been in that studio there. It's kind of small. You know, it's not too far from the ring when you exit from the dressing room.
Right.
And he went right straight to Bob Armstrong's corner. Mm-hmm. Bob Armstrong had a sleeper hold on Eddie Sullivan. And Carson went over and grabbed his belt and started to go back in the dressing room with it. So Bob turned loose of his sleeper hold on Sullivan. And he went over to where Carson was going to have to walk past him. And he bent down through the ropes and he reached out to get the belt. Well, Carson saw him coming, I guess, and he was ready. And he just slammed that belt right into Bob's face, man. And so Bob went down, man, in the ring, and he got cut. He got a cut open, and he was bleeding. So but Bob, knowing Bob and the fighter he was, you know, and Carson's kind of standing there watching and laughing about it. And then when Carson turned to walk away with the – still had the belt Bob reached through the ropes, and he got his hands on him, man. So the referee started ringing the bell for the disqualification. Obviously, he's going to disqualify the guy that's wrestling Armstrong, you know, Sullivan, because he's got all this outside interference going on. And then Sullivan got up. He had managed to get his stuff back together again, and he grabbed Bob from behind. And then Carson jumped up on the apron and with the belt again. And now he took the big swing, man. He's going to open him up big time. And Bob ducked. And Carson hit Sullivan with the belt. And then Bob reached and grabbed Don Carson, who's standing on the apron, right? And he's got the belt. Bob reached and grabbed him by his – he wore those three-piece suits back in those days. And he grabbed him by his coat, and he flung him over the top rope into the ring. The studio crowd exploded, man. They were like, and then Carson and Sullivan, man, they just slid out real quick before he could get to him. But he did get his belt back. So Bob did his interview on the end of the show. He said he was still bleeding. And Carson did his interview from another studio.
All right, so that's a really great TV show. I can hear the fans, because you're right, the studio is small, and it was quite a noise that was coming out of there when Bob got Carson in the ring. So what happened 6 nights later, though, in Dothan?
Well, Eddie Mansfield and Mike Stallings, they got the evening off to a great start. They had wrestled to a 20-minute time limit the week before, and this one was 30 minutes, and they still didn't have a winner. So they went 20 minutes last week, 30 minutes this time. And in the Battle of the White Mask, I call it, the pro, Tarzan Baxter, beat the intern. Charlie Cook and David Schultz kind of stole the show, man. According to what Bob told me, you know, he said, wow, it was hard to follow that. He said they both went out on the dirt floor of the building several times, and then the Lumberjacks threw them back into the ring. And in the end, it was kind of the referee that got it on the chin, basically. He stopped the match and called it a no contest after both of them had knocked him down. And then they fought again, like they had the week before, out into the crowd and around the building. So it was a no contest decision, and Bob and I talked about it. We threw him in a Texas death match the next time, man. That was going to give everybody the opportunity to not get disqualified and to go on and do whatever the heck he wanted to do. So the fans were very happy, man, with the six-man tag elimination match with the Gibsons and Rip Tyler against the Assassins and Billy Spears. And they were happy because, wow, they totally eliminated the entire Assassins and Billy Spears team, and they didn't lose a member of their own team. So all three, the two Assassins and Billy Spears, all got beat. And they never beat anybody on the other team. So Billy Spears got really hot about it. And after they left the ring, he went back and got the microphone. And he made a challenge. You know, he says, and you know, basically, I'm going to put it my way, the way I thought thinking was. Billy Spears challenged him to $10,000. It can't happen again. If you beat us again like that, I give you $10,000. Basically Billy Spears reached into his mama's pocket for the second week, and they took 10,000 more and stuck it out there for him, man. So Billy Spears is having a good time with his mama's money, man. So that's a 10-day, you know, and these fans are all there, and they're seeing a good match and good night, and wow, they've got a challenge there, so. And that challenge, obviously, is going to be, who wouldn't take that? So the main event for the Gulf Coast Championship between champion Bob Armstrong and Don Carson, it really topped off a great night of wrestling for the fans. Carson used his peanut butter glove, man, but it wasn't more than Armstrong could handle. And the building exploded when Bob beat him right in the middle. He put him to sleep early that night, way before Don's bedtime.
All right. Man, I was not there that night, but I can just see, I got the vision of that with the bullet. That's awesome. All right, so it sounds like another crowd-building evening, and I think that's what you had in mind. Not so much heat on the heels as nights when you were there, but fans really enjoyed the big babyface wins, it sounds like. So what was the attendance for this one? Had to be a little better.
Well, man, the string of winning nights at the box office continued, man. Wow, we were so happy. It was small. We didn't get a major, huge jump. I mean, we're building here, and we're just not quite there yet. But another 100 fans was added. So it brought it to the total this time of 2,200 from the 2,100 the Friday night before. And there again, it was the biggest Southeastern Gulf Coast crowd so far. So if you added the 6,000 plus fans in Knoxville that same night, Southeastern Wrestling as a company shattered the one-night record for attendance with almost 8,500 fans in two cities 500 miles apart.
All right. So that's awesome. Congratulations, Todd. That would have been a great night for some of the biggest wrestling companies, I mean, in the entire world. It seems like things were starting to pick up in Southeastern Gulf Coast. I think you said earlier that we might hear what the other three cities down south did, attendance-wise.
Well, I didn't think we would get this far, Dan, to be honest with you, before running out of time. So, yeah, we're going to jump on it, man. This was the first time we'd ever run four cities in the same week in southeastern Gulf Coast. The first one of the week on Sunday, April 30th, was Pensacola. It was just their second live event. The crowd was up slightly from the 900 that was there the first night. We just broke 1,000. Around 1,050 was the attendance that night in Pensacola. And breaking that 1,000 figure was just a good number, you know, and especially considering the territory had been hurt, man, so badly before we got there. Happy with that. So we ran our first ever Panama City, Florida event. And that city received its TV signal from WTVY in Dothan. It was a small arena, former skating rink. It had been modified into a wrestling building. And the first night, crowd was very small. Actually, it was less than 500 people. It was disappointing to both Bob and I, but it was better than Montgomery was the first time we tried to run it, which was weeks earlier. We talked about that one.
Yeah.
And Montgomery's going to be running again in the next studcast. So we discussed, he and I, giving the money back, but decided not to alienate the fans that came because they came to see a match, you know, and there was almost 500 of them. So we ran the event. And, boy, we were both glad we did. Those fans were so excited, man. That building was electric, man. And, you know, there wasn't many people there, but, wow, they obviously loved their wrestling. So, and it was a small arena, like I said, and it was going to be used until that city built a beautiful building downtown, which was years later. And we ran matches weekly in Panama City in that small arena for years, and it houses just kept growing just like everywhere else we were going. And we, for years, packed them fans to the rafters in that building. So in the next couple of months and then Studcast of the future, I think I'm going to, you know, describe a getting knifed by a fan there in that little building. I got hit with a chair in the back of the head from behind at the same time. And but just to emphasize the other side of that city, and that city's crowds grew from that first show of 500 that night, Dave, in the little bitty old skating rink building to more than 5,000 when we got into the new downtown building.
Wow.
So 500 to 5,000, wow, that's a jump. So by the time, you know, wrestling had exploded, pretty much by that period, wrestling had exploded pretty much southeast. You know, when we put 5,000 in that building in Panama City, Southeastern was on fire and all the way back into Knoxville, man, where they had to close the doors to the wrestling fans in 1982. So, you know, it's a lot of things going on, man, in that whole area from the Gulf Coast all the way almost to Ohio.
Well, I tell you what, you've had an amazing life. You've been there, done that. A lot of fascinating things that have been in your background and still in your future, no doubt. You just mentioned two things, by the way, back to back that I never knew about you. Getting cut in a riot and what happened to close down wrestling in Knoxville in the early 80s. There was one more city that ran too. What about that?
Yep, you're sure. You're right, man. New Brockton.
Yep.
New Brockton, Alabama, just outside Dothan. We'd been running it every Saturday night for several weeks. It was the first town other than Dothan that we ran. So, and its crowds had grown. And it had started out with about 500 the first night there. It had grown by this town to more than 1,000 people in little New Brockton.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, those fans there really love their wrestling, too. And So the four cities' total attendance that week was just over 4,500. But, wow, man, those numbers were going to explode in the next 2 years.
That's
unbelievable
awesome.
What the growth is going to be.
Man, and the folks in that part of southeast Alabama just supported wrestling maybe like no other market. I mean, it's amazing what you had going in Knoxville, but then what happened in the Dothan area. And so many years it was called a hotbed of wrestling, and there is no doubt about that. All right, I can't wait, Stud. This ride is going to be so fascinating as we move forward. Sorry, everybody, but, well, I think it happened. We ran out of time. So no learning tree question this week. I'm so ashamed of you, stud. I don't know what we're going to do with you.
Did my best, my man. I didn't think we'd get this far.
I know. All right, but listen, on Facebook, to become friends with Ron, please go to the Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud Facebook page. Like him and follow him there, and you automatically become friends with a legend. On Twitter, follow him at Ron Fuller Welch. Visit the stud on his tremendous website, tnstud.com. That's tnstud.com. You'll find great videos, a photo gallery, every studcast ever done. 43 super studcasts are there. Shop the stud store, all kinds of souvenirs, personally autographed photos, the classic Continental Video 5-pack, his Tennessee Stud mask. They are replicas, and it's one of the coolest things on that website. And his thrilling Lion novel, Brutus, and you can even get it autographed. Southeastern Rewind on YouTube is where much of what the stud is famous for is displayed. So you can find a lot of stuff there. But the place you can find everything now that Ron has ever done is going to be doing and will do in the future, and it'll always be there, the amazing streaming channel, ClassicContinentalWrestling.com. It's all there, and it always will be there. I think that is so cool. It is just going to be an archive of old school wrestling, and Ron is at the center of all of it. New Superstars of the Past series number 2, about Martin Farmer Burns, will be on there this week, along with new stud stories and Continental TV shows. The Stars of the Sports series with Andre the Giant, Mankind Mick Foley, and now legendary Ron Wright. Documentaries of Wildcat Wendell Cooley and the new world premiere of Tony Anthony's Dirty White Boy. Plus, a tremendous 2-hour special of the Mongolian Stomper matches. More than 4 hours of Southeastern matches are now on there. And coming soon, the original classic Southeastern TV shows and much more. Subscribe now at ClassicContinentalWrestling.com. ClassicContinentalWrestling.com. Only $4.99 per month or $39.99 per year. It is fast becoming the best old school streaming site on the entire planet. Don't miss this special offer right now for a limited time only. Get a free 1-week trial on ClassicContinentalWrestling.com. These studcasts are so good, Ron. I am digging this 2-market deal. I don't know how you're handling it, but listen, it's filled with historic information that every wrestling fan should hear. So I'm anxious to know where we ride next week.
Well, in southeastern Knoxville, we're going to focus on May the 12th, 1978, that Knoxville card. It's a triple main event card. It's going to be my last appearance of the summer of 1978 in Knoxville. A classic match is going to be on that one with two superstars, Olympian Bob Root as a babyface against Hall of Famer Mid-South Junkyard Dog Sylvester Ritter. What a match that's going to be. And we're going to find out what was on the TV that promoted that card and the results of the matches and the attendance. And then we're going to ride south, man, into southeastern Gulf Coast as it continues to grow into the first 6-city week in its history. We're going to run 6 cities for the first time ever. We're going to become a bona fide real territory there. So Mobile, Alabama is going to finally open. It's going to open with a riot and me getting a trip to the jail. Montgomery is back on the schedule. And hopefully this time it has enough fans to run the event. We're going to focus on May the 12th, Dothan's card. That will follow the entire territory. And we're going to send that TV and that same card around the entire territory. And we're going to talk about why we were able to do that and how it worked. And then we're going to discuss the TVs to promote the Dothan show, the results of the Dothan matches and other spotlighted cities, and get the attendance for all 6 of the cities in that territory next week. So everybody, sorry about not getting to the learning tree question this week. I really am, you know, we got so much going on, but we're going to make our best to push to get to it next week for sure. So thanks, everybody, for joining us again. we hope, man, you all enjoyed this. And please tell your friends about us, and take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
Hey, great job again, Stud. Another exciting week for Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains. I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This Studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud LLC.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud. This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.